Well, Robin, you and I have been accused of liking food.
Yeah, it's happened.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to talk food, and we're going to talk food in a very serious way. Robin Kelson and Brooke Mohannon with us. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robin.
So what we're going to do here is, first of all, I want to understand Montana Food Economies Initiative. What's that all about?
Montana Food Economy Initiative is a organization. It's based from Arrow and Western Sierra Grande, and it's to evaluate the local, it's different, looking at five different regions throughout the state. And here in the Flathead, we're looking at evaluating our current food economy and looking for areas in which we can strengthen that.
One of the things that kind of surprises me, in other places I've been, we've had a lot of opportunities to buy local produce and local food. And it seems like here in the Flathead, it's a little limited.
It is limited. Some of it's limited by our climate, and the other part of it is limited simply because we haven't developed the resources to make it reasonably attractive for enough farmers to be able to grow it and provide. So this is where enhancing our distribution system and our processing systems, which are two aspects of a food economy system, to make us more attractive to be able to provide more food to our local community.
Now, you can find some good locally sourced tomatoes during the growing season, but what else might be available? Is it just retail, or is it directly from the growing locations?
We have multiple outlets. You can buy it direct from farms. You can buy it at some of our smaller grocery stores in the valley. And then additionally, we're working on getting more restaurants to utilize local produce. And the things that are available, we start in May with greens like arugula, lettuce, spinach, and it runs all the way through. Just last week, we sold the last of winter squash that was available in the valley.
Okay.
And here's the thing, that the idea of a food system is everybody who eats is part of the system. Mm-hmm. And our previous paradigm has been, you know, you have the farmers that grow the food, and they're responsible for all of it. But really, if we as consumers recognize that we're part of the system, we can drive what our farmers grow, and we can help help with the processing of the food and the distribution of the food, and then it helps create a cycle. So now we keep the processing in the valley. We develop an economy that involves distributing and getting the food to all the people who eat it, whether they're individuals or markets or hospitals or schools. Mm-hmm. And we also play a role in recovering food waste, because that becomes a resource for making compost that can make more food that's high quality.
It kind of sounds a little bit like a chicken and egg sort of a thing. We've somehow or another, we've got to find the chicken, or we got to find the egg, and I'm not sure which is which. Can you kind of help us with that?
I think, honestly, this is me, and then I'll let Brooke talk. I think the big one is the consumer. Those of us who eat, those you know, we if we demand high quality local food, then we create the market for the farmer to grow the food and for the processor to process the food and the distributor to get it to us. So I think it's us, and that's one of the things we discovered when, through the MFAI grant, opportunity was to see what's the state of the local system and what needs to be developed. And so that's one option. And Brooke, what else did we find?
Yes, definitely we found that people do lack access, and so what we're trying to do is organize the farmers together so that we have more selling power to go to places like Super One and saying, or, you know, larger stores, that we can provide mass quantities of items if people are willing to buy them. We can grow them for sure. We just need to. So, yeah, it's like it has to come together. The demand and the supply come together.
I'm curious as to how we do that, because like places like Super One and Rosar's and Smith's, they can get their food from anywhere.
They can. And so this is where Climate Smart's participation in this comes in. Is I think something over close to 97%, over 90% of our food for sure comes out of the valley, away from the valley. And so it's at risk of, you know, natural disasters or pest issues that happen elsewhere. And we're reliant on that food coming in. And if we can develop the demand and as people who eat the food, that we want that food grown here, that actually helps our whole community become more resilient and robust in the face of disruptive change we might not be able to control.
You're speaking climate change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, too, and we just recently went through this whole thing with lettuce. We had tainted lettuce, and it was coming from, we didn't even know where it was coming from. And finally, we figured out it was one farm in California. But my gosh, that was a lot of lettuce.
Right. That's a great example. So it doesn't even have to be climate change, but that's a perfect example. If because we could provide that lettuce here if the demand was, if we made known the demand. And then we created the opportunity for the farmers to produce that lettuce, as an example. And now you have control over it.
Yes, I would agree with Robin on that. We can grow it if people are willing to buy it.
You know, I used to, on Sunday mornings in Denver, I'd get on my motorcycle and I'd ride out to out of town, a place called Brighton. And there I would go to a big farmer's market. It was a farm, actually. And I'd buy up a week's worth of vegetables there. Nice, fresh. I mean, they were like, hey, had like been in the field a couple hours earlier. And bring those home. And I thought, boy, when I come back home to Montana, that's what I'm going to find. And I was shocked to find out that those opportunities aren't there.
They're coming.
I hope so, because it's wonderful. And there's just, you know, I don't care what it is. Any vegetable, when you get it shortly after it comes out of the ground, it's just tastier.
Yeah.
And that is one of the points we try to sell is that we do harvest within 48 hours of it being delivered, like, say, to restaurants or retail locations. And, I mean, farmer's market, too, it's usually harvested within 24 hours. So it is super fresh. It's so tasty. And like you just said, it's just the best.
Yeah. My taster is not as sensitive as most people's. And as a result, no, seriously, it isn't. And so I tend to eat more because I'm not satisfied. But when I get these natural, particularly vegetables, and meat products too, I find that I eat less because I'm satisfied because it's tastier.
Yeah, you're also getting more of the nutrition in that food because it hasn't degraded from the distance that it's traveled. So your body says, I'm getting the nourishment, I'm good to go.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to what you guys are able to accomplish here. Give me an idea now of time frame and all this stuff. How long is it going to take for you to get all this turned around?
That's the million-dollar question. Well, we started, I focus a lot on the distribution and working with the produce farmers. And I would say our volume doubled last year, and we're hoping to do that again this year. So it is growing almost exponentially.
How many farmers do we have in the area that are raising vegetables that we would consume here?
I would say between a dozen to 15.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they vary in size, you know, from maybe 10 acres down to 1 acre. But you can produce a lot of food off of 1 acre.
Sure.
Never mind on 10 acres or more. And I think there's a lot of agricultural land in the valley that can still be utilized for vegetable production, maybe converted out of hay or pasture or grain production into vegetable production. Again, meeting that demand as the demand continues to grow.
Can we make that something that the farmers will find financially attractive?
Yes.
And so the purpose of this MFEI grant was to evaluate kind of the state of our local food system. And that's going to complete with a meeting at Free the Seeds on March 2nd, Saturday, at the Flathead Valley Community College. And we're going to present what we found. And what we've found is that the kind of the weak links, so the farmers are doing great. It's the weak links are production, processing, and distribution, which is, it's developing. But what drives those two, as we said, is consumer education and demand. So really kind of where we're going to put our focus, I think, is on helping to educate our community, which is primarily the people who eat the food, which is everyone in this room.
Right.
And help market the value of if we together help strengthen our system, all of our health increases, our local economy increases, and we create greater resiliency in the face of things like the salmonella scare of the romaine lettuce from California. Yeah. That just doesn't become an issue.
We have Robin Kelson and Brooke Bohannon with us, and these ladies are from Climate Smart, and also, we're going to talk about Free the Seeds, and I want to jump into that for just in just a moment. But the one thing I want to ask you guys about, when I go into a supermarket, and I shop at all of them around here, and I see a sign that says locally grown or local, boy, I jump right on it.
That's great.
I wish I was seeing more of that.
I think that you will see more of that in the main stores in the next couple years to come. We're working on that.
Is it about raising enough produce to satisfy the needs of the consumers here?
I believe that there's a stigma with local produce that we lack consistency and quality and availability. And so we need to demonstrate that that is, that's part of the education that we need to convey to our community, that we can have consistent supplies of seasonal crops while they're available and storage crops for longer, and that we can meet the demand. It's just knowing those numbers. We're just trying to gather that data of what a facility might need, and then the farmers can grow it.
And Also, it's some of it is consumer demand. You know, if we as the people who eat the food locally demand that we get more local produce, then that will help the farmers do whatever gear up they need to do. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for a farmer to grow a lot of food if they don't know where what their market is yet.
Sure. And that consistency is important, and expectation as well. I would point out that when I see a sign that says local, like local corn or something like that, I notice that it's gone quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, definitely.
Which would tell me as a retailer that this is something I'd like to do more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. I heard a futurist talk some time back who said, it's ironic that we're importing so much produce from around the world because the travel cost,
yes,
as fuels are going up, are added, and that's driving the price up. So if we got back to basics, we could be all better off, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point, Robin. It turns out that because there's carbon costs associated with all of that travel distance, and that's hidden, because it's subsidized or it's carried over some other way. So the person who's buying the food doesn't actually know the actual cost to grow that food and bring it these long distances. Plus it adds, emissions to the atmosphere, and, it's very expensive at a climate level.
Right. This is fascinating to me, and I really hope you guys can do something with this, because as I said, that was one of the things I enjoyed most about living in Denver and was looking most forward to when I came back here, to back home again. Talk with me about Feed the Seeds.
Free the Seeds? So Free the Seeds is in its fourth annual year.
I mean Free the Seeds,
That's
not
right.
Feed the Seeds.
All right.
All
That's
right.
Okay. It's a free fair where we have a seed swap. So another key point to a strong community-based food system is having an accessible, available supply of quality seeds that grow that nutrient-dense food that we all want. And that's, ironically enough, becoming harder and harder to get access to. So it's super important for people to save seeds locally and share them. And so that's what a seed swap is, and that's what this seed fair is. It's a big component of it is distributing what are called open pollinated or heirloom seeds that people can save seeds from when they plant them and grow them up. The other thing we do is we have workshops and booths and community conversations, all of which are intended to develop people's skills and resources and give people whatever information they need so that they can have greater knowledge and access to healthy food.
Okay.
Well, once we get the seeds, then we have, then we can, the whole thing perpetuates itself.
Yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's key.
Yeah, you get good seeds. You're going to grow great food, and that's going to produce seeds as well.
You got it.
You got
See?
It.
Okay. So it's once we get this thing started, that's the deal.
That's
and
the
a good
deal.
Starting point is the free fair coming up March 2nd, John. So you got a week to plan to a month to plan to attend. What are the hours on that, and where is it going to be?
9 a.m. to 3:30 at the Flathead Valley Community College Arts and Technology Building in Kalispell.
Okay.
And if you have any questions or want to see the schedule, you can visit us online at freetheseedsmontana.com.
There you go.
Oh, boy. All right.
That'll be great.
Great conversation. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.